Hi, this is Gary Puckett, Once Upon a Time of Gary Puckett and the Union Gap, and you are listening to the Follow Your Dream podcast with Robert Miller. Young
girl. Everyone has a dream. Robert Miller is a musician who had a dream to become a rock star. He followed his dream, and he succeeded. If you're ready to pursue and succeed at your dream, then listen up and get inspired and motivated to take action today. Welcome to the Follow Your Dream podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Follow Your Dream podcast, the award-winning Follow Your Dream podcast with listeners worldwide in 200 countries. I'm Robert Miller, your host. And I want to welcome you to a very special episode of this podcast. This is the first interview that I am doing jointly. My co-host is 60s superstar Gary Puckett of Gary Puckett and the Union Gap. They had an incredible string of hits, including Woman, Woman, and Young Girl. In fact, in 1968, Gary and the group had six top 10 hits and sold more records than anyone else, including a little band from Liverpool, England. And our joint guest today is another music superstar, Jerome Gourdin, somewhat better known by the name Little Anthony, of Little Anthony and the Imperials. They were one of the few groups that bridged the doo-wop era of the 50s and the rock era of the 60s. And speaking of an incredible string of hits, Anthony and his group had one hit after another, including Tears on My Pillow, Shimmy Shimmy Coco Pop, I always love that name, Going Out of My Head, I'm on the Outside Looking In, and Hurts So Bad. Their songs have been covered by a zillion artists in the years since. They appeared twice on the Ed Sullivan Show, and they were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And you know, in the middle of this episode, I always do a song fest with my guests. Ordinarily, we always do one or two or three hits, but there's so many hits that Little Anthony and the Imperials have had, we're going to play them all. And also, you know that I like to feature a song of mine at the beginning and end of each episode, but in this case, I wanted to honor my co-host. So the featured song in this episode that I'm playing underneath the introduction is Young Girl, one of Gary's number one hits. So, Gary, I want to welcome you back. And Little Anthony, I want to welcome you to the Follow Your Dream podcast, baby.
Nice being here, looking at you. It's nice. Technology, love it, love it.
Fantastic. You know, I was thinking, I made comment that there's only been a couple of artists that have been able to transition from the 50s to the 60s, and you're one of them. I could only think of a couple of others. I know Dion did. He had a hit in the 50s, and he had hits in the 60s.
Yeah.
And the Everly Brothers also had 50s hits and 60s. Who am I missing here, guys?
Johnny Maestro.
Okay.
Johnny was with Press at first, and then years later, he became a part of the Brooklyn Bridge.
Right.
So he had eras that he was very successful in. There's only a few. Like Gary, to me, he's a young man, you know.
Well, you know what? It was really fun traveling with you this last summer. I enjoyed getting to know you and, you know, your vibe. I just enjoyed it a lot. I know that it was a little difficult for you because of the thing you just went through with the pacemaker and all that kind of stuff. But you're back in great health, and I'm happy to see that because maybe we'll be able to travel again together.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. Actually, you know, the last tour I did like that was in 1965 with Dick Clark.
Yeah. Tell us about that.
Well, in those days, you know, they didn't have no Provost buses and kitchens and TVs in every room and all that kind of stuff. No, we sat in like Greyhound type buses, and your place where you stored your bags or your... We did some on the bottom, but everything was on the top. You throw it in the top rack, we call it. Now today, the racks that they call racks are not like beds, man, you know? And so it was kind of a cool thing, because when you're out on the road like that, on a tour that I hadn't done like that in 65, and I wasn't sure if I could handle it at my age, going to show you what happens when you run into greed. If I couldn't refuse. So I said, let me try this. But the family was kind of really reluctant about it, because they didn't want to put me through anything that, because I never knew what my, I knew my age, you know, but they're in me, I'm 83, but there's a 32-year-old guy inside of me. And I tell people, don't tell him, because if you do, you'll upset him. You know what I'm saying? He thinks he's 32.
I can understand. So, Anthony, was this the Caravan of Stars that Dick Clark used to have?
Yeah, he called Dick Clark's Caravan of Stars. Then I did the back in the 58, 59, 60, 61, we did a lot of stuff for William Morris and some of the agencies in those days. That was a normal thing to tour. So I had the pleasure of touring with some of the greatest artists that ever opened their mouths or played the guitar. It just boggles my mind that I was with all these people, the Platters, the original Platters. I've been on tours with Dion. I've been on with Frankie Avalon. I've been on tours with just everybody. And so shifting back to that tour, the one I did with Gary, it was pretty cool, because you become like a family. You can't be with people for two and a half months, I believe it was, and not get to know them in an intimate way, because now you got to share all of the drama and all of the laughter and also the tears, but you're doing it together. And so what happened was, it made me a better cat. Even though I was not feeling well, the camaraderie that I had with everybody on the tour, it was like medicine, man. It was like holding me up.
Gary, tell everybody a little bit about this tour. Where did you go? Who else was on the tour?
The tour included the Cow Sills, the Classics Four, the Vogues, the Association, and me and the Turtles. That was the lineup, basically. And you share everything. You know, there's two buses. I was the only guy that didn't go on the bus because I can't do the bus, you know. And
you had VIP treatment. Is that what you're saying?
Well, not really. I elected to get a rental car and drive. And I drove with Tom Garrett and Paul Weddle from the Classics. And it's just easier on me to do the concert, get done, go back to the hotel, sleep for 6 hours, and get up and drive. Even if it's a 12-hour drive, it's easier on me that way than leaving at 2 a.m. and, you know, getting to a hotel at 7 a.m. and not being able to get into the hotel until 1 p.m., all that. It was just difficult for me.
Tell me a little bit about the audiences that you played before. Did they have all different age categories to them, or what kind of audiences would you say?
I think they were anywhere from, I've seen some young people in there, actually, very young. But basically, I think from 40, 45-ish to all the way up to 75, 80, in there somewhere. But it was a mixture of all of them people. It was a mixture.
Uh-huh. I would sometimes ask the audience, I would say, by applause, who's 50 and below? And you'd have a few people applaud, and that was really nice. And I'd always say, hey, I love when the young people like what us old guys do. You know? And then who by applause between 60 and 70? And they would applaud, and then I'd say, who's between 70 and 80? And usually that'd be our biggest applause right there, you know. So we'd have a laugh out of that, and that was a good thing.
Yeah.
Hey, it's fantastic that you have an audience that stuck with you guys for what, 60 years or more?
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
It is. And then to see the amazing thing about, I would say about 85% of the venues we did was always packed.
Yeah, always sold out, always. And very nice venues as well.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody. This is Robert Miller, your host. You know, one of the many benefits to me of doing this podcast is being able to collaborate musically with some of my guests, who are among the best musicians in the world. My first collaboration was with the great Jim Peterik of the Ides of March and formerly with Survivor. Jim and I collaborated on The Fall of Winter, a song about a blue-collar worker who dreams of a better life. Also contributing was Elliot Randall, the renowned guitarist. John Helliwell was the amazing saxophonist in Supertramp, one of the greatest bands of the rock era. John collaborated with me on my 2023 album, Bobby M. and the Paisley Parade, and he's featured on several tracks. One of them is This Time. Tony Carey is a singer-songwriter and keyboard genius who played with Ritchie Blackmore's Rainbow. Tony has collaborated with me on several recordings, including his exquisite organ playing on All of the Time. I want you all of the time. I need you all of the time. And I've just finished a new collaboration with the brilliant trumpeter Randy Brecker, formerly of Blood, Sweat, and Tears, who plays on my new single, The Rich Ones. Collaborations like these make the podcast very special indeed. As always, thank you for listening and keep on rocking. All right, listen, I want to get into the Songfest portion because we got a lot of songs of yours, Anthony, that we want to get to. So right now, I'm playing that first hit of yours from 1958, Tears on My Pillow.
You don't remember me, but I remember you. 'Twas not so long ago, you broke my heart in two. Tears on my pillow, pain in my heart, caused by
Tell me a little bit what your recollections are of that one.
Oh, you got a year. We used to record in a place called, I can't remember the name of the place. It was a few places in New York City, especially like Bell Sound, but that Bell Sound came later. But we recorded the building with a recording studio downstairs in the basement part. And it's very famous. A lot of great hit records came out of there. It was in a building called 1650 Broadway. And that's where my record company at that time was.
You talk about the Brill Building, or is it another building?
No, Brill Building was down on Broadway. No, that's 1619 Broadway.
Okay.
That was a publishing building. That's where I met Nielsen,
Right. That's where all the hits were written.
Everybody hung out there, man. They had that little bar down there. The Turf or whatever they called it. I can't remember. But everybody was there. Bobby Down. When they weren't famous, you'd hang around those buildings just to get to know the publishers or whatever you needed to do that maybe would introduce you to people that would end up, getting a shot at, a record deal, because there's a zillion independent record companies in that building of 1650 Broadway. Actually, what I know, it took me a long time to get to this, but it's a setup. But George Gold, who was the principal owner, CEO of Gordon N Records, actually gave me the idea for the style that became me. Because prior to that, I wanted to be like Nat Cole. I wanted to sing. I was a pop singer. I was studied pop singing as a little boy. I used to do a lot of plays and stuff, and my mom was a backstage mama, that kind of thing. She was a gospel singer. So it's always been music. And so I was set up by George Golden to succeed because I can vividly remember when we were doing Tears on My Pillow, we didn't like it because we felt we had a better song than Ernest, one of the Imperials wrote, called Just Two Kinds of People in the World. And George, Mr. Golden, liked it very much. But he felt there was something missing. I think that Mr. Golden wanted to do something, have a male class kind of group, like the equivalent at that time was the Chantels. So he wanted that kind of a thing. And he came in the studio when we were recording and he says, Anthony, who's your favorite singer? I said, Nat King Cole. And a lot of people, Elvis, you know, because that's the era I came out of. And this one and that one, and Nate Nelson, the Flamingos. And he said, you listen to Nat King Cole. What's he do? I said, well, he's really clear how he says his words. And so George said, you mean the syllables? And he said, why don't you sing like you talk? And I go, what do you mean? I didn't know I was a tenor. I didn't know. And he said, because when you talk, it seemed like you can reach range to him. And so he said, I want you to do this. When you sing you don't remember me in that song, he said, do it this way. You don't remember me. Don't emphasize each syllable. You don't remember me. And that created a sound that we all know now, and myself, is Little Anthony.
That's the Little Anthony sound. You got it, baby.
Let me ask you a question, Anthony. Did Little Jimmy Scott have something to do with your sound?
No, I had the great pleasure of meeting him and actually working with him in Gary, Indiana, in the nightclub. That was an interesting thing, a jazz guy and a rock and roller cat, you know, whatever I was. But I met him, and he had one of the most wonderful voices I have ever heard on a human being, because it wasn't like a natural man's voice. It was someplace, I'm not really sure. Actually, I'll drop the name. Nancy Wilson told me that's what she learned from her, start her career, listening how he sang. And also, a lot of people don't know, I think Joe Pesci, before he was Joe Pesci, he was a guitar player and sings. And he told me that that was his favorite artist. And everywhere I went, basically other singers were telling me, man, Jimmy Scott, man. Wow, man, Jimmy Scott. Come to find out later, Frank Sinatra talked well of him. You know, he's one of the great voices of our time. So I got to work with him, but I didn't actually get any kind of a thing from him because I was another era. And then I was in another kind of a genre. I was doing like rhythm, blues, rock and roll, whatever you call it. But I got to know him. I got to know him well.
All right, let's go on to the next one. Your next big hit was Shimmy Shimmy Coco Bop in 1960.
Shimmy, shimmy, Coco Bop. Shimmy, shimmy, bop. Shimmy, shimmy, Coco Bop. Shimmy, shimmy, bop. Sitting in a native hut all alone in blue. Sitting in a native hut wondering what to do. Along came a native girl, did a native dance. It was like in paradise, put me in a trance. Going shimmy, shimmy, Coco Bop. Shimmy, shimmy, bop. Shimmy.
Tell me about that one.
The genius of Mr. Golder. I never remember calling us up there. And he says, you know, there's a song I gave Richard Barrett, Richie. He would call him Richie. Richie, he was the A&R man, you know. Richie, what is that song? You got the kid in Brooklyn. What is the thing that got with the tick, 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 tick. And so he brings it. He played it for us and all the guys in the group. We're all from Brooklyn, man. No, man. We can't, Mr. Golden, no. We can't do that. He says, oh, yes, you can. In other words, you sang when you were told to record in those days. And we actually did it. But no one realized that that song would become a part of who I am in my career. So that's. Yeah, you mentioned that. Since you mentioned it, it is not one of my favorite tunes. I still can't figure that tune out.
Tell me what it means. I never understood. I don't know if anybody knows what it means.
Why don't let me know? They had to get a guy to create a shimmy step or something. Left foot forward, right foot back, bring him side. This, and I'm going, what is that? And I was kind of embarrassed about it because, you know, all the other groups, you know, they were singing all that cool stuff, you know, popping their fingers. And here we were, ding, 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 ding. So, but he, who knew that about a month later, it just went boom. And it was just little kids got their mamas to buy the song. It was a novelty song. And the genius of Mr. Golden was he recognized that.
It was a great song.
Well, I liked it, Anthony. I thought it was great.
There you go.
Oh, no, not you, Gary. Oh, no.
Hey, you got Gary saying yes, and you got me saying yes, okay? 2-0. We love that song.
Oh, man, you know, the people that I can name and people in power and government that I performed for, one was Colin Powell. He sent a note up. Hey, could you sing that song?
See there? I told you so.
You got to put that in your next album, okay? A little quote from Colin Powell.
But I can't get away with not singing it. No, there's no way.
That's fantastic. All right, let's go to the next one, which was a monster hit for you. Going Out of My Head, 1964.
Well, I think I'm going out of my head. Yes, I think I'm going out of my head over you. Over you. I want you to want me. I need you so badly. I can't think of anything.
That's been sung by so many people.
Yes, I'll tell you. Let me tell you a little quick story on that one, because everything that basically I've done in my life, it's a story behind it, a backstory. That song, we got a call from Teddy Radazzo, who wrote it. And we were at that time just signed with Don Costa Production. Don Costa was Frank Sinatra's music arranger and all that good stuff and conductor. And actually, Sinatra heard it, Teddy play it, and he wanted the song. Teddy said, no, I already committed it to this group called Little Anthony Pearl. Sinatra probably said, who? Well, he was pretty cool. And what happened was, I don't want to make this too long, but it's interesting, I think, that we actually got there, and Teddy played it on this little upright piano against the wall, you know? And he started going boom, boom, boom. I mean, went deep with his finger on the, and you knew the first two or three bars. Oh boy, you everybody knew. And then he sang it, and I just made it my own. And the reason why I made it my own, I had learned from my acting experiences in my life as a little boy actor. A lot of people don't know. I kind of put it together because of knowing Teddy. He was having a lot of personal problems with women. So if you notice the songs he wrote, I'm on the outside looking in, Hurt So Bad, Going Out of My Head, Take Me Back. It was about his wife that he loved dearly. I mean, real life, love. They end up, something happened, they got a divorce, and his heart was just, he just couldn't get over that. You know, he couldn't. But what he did was he found an outlet by writing how he felt. Because I have had the experience as an actor and knowing how to do different characters, I sensed what he was trying to convey. Because he always told me, he can, and by the way, this guy can sing by himself. But he told me, hey, Anthony, you're going to be my voice. And I could never figure that out. Because he said, was something in my voice that matched what he wanted to convey, that he felt he couldn't, it didn't fit in, even though he wrote the song.
You were his interpreter.
Yes, I was, literally, and obviously he was not just my producer, but he became my friend and my brother. I'm with his family, all of his family to this day, who are basically Hawaiians, and his other kids, we all know each other. So I got to be with him all the time, in his home, everywhere, we hung out. He was the first guy to turn me on to Japanese food, you know? And also, when we first met Teddy, this manager at the time, his name was Ernie Martinelli, ran into Teddy on Broadway. And Teddy told, hey, man, you got that group Little Anthony and Pearls? He said, yeah. He says, I got a song, you know. So we went up there, and the first thing Don Costa did, he was sitting in that chair rocking in his office. And he said, nobody here has any contracts, do you? Any record contracts? And all the guys raised their hand, not me, not me, not me. And I sat there, I had my hand up. And he said, well, what about you? I said, I got a contract. He won't let me out. And he said, well, who is that? I said, a Morris Levy of Roulette Records.
Uh-oh.
Tommy James can tell you the same story about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've had him on the podcast telling that story.
He's notorious. Once you sign with him, you're dead. You're gone. He'll put you on the shelf. He don't care. Well, anyway, because when Don Costa heard that, Don said, oh, gosh. Listen, I'll call you back later, you know, a couple of days. A couple of days went by, we get a call, come to the office. When we walked to the office, he was standing like this, holding the white paper, like big paper. He said, I got your contract. I said, how'd you do that? Nobody leaves bars, leave me? Nobody. And he said, I got your contract. I was so excited about being released from him, I didn't even ask how he did it. It wasn't until a year later or months later that in the conversation with Teddy said to me, you didn't know how you got your, Don got the contract? I said, no, how? He said, he called Sinatra.
Wow.
He went over Morris's head.
Well, let's put it this way. He had friends in high places.
Yes, I can imagine. All right, let's get to two more songs here. I'm on the Outside Looking In, which you just mentioned.
I'm on the outside looking in. And I want to be back on the inside with you. You are with somebody new, and I don't know what to do, 'cause I'm still in love with you.
Tell us about that one.
Fell in love with it when he played it on that, get on that little upright piano. And he said, Don said, we'd like you to, you know, we have two songs, but we want to do this one first. Because Don was looking at the bigger picture. He didn't want to have like a one-hit wonder thing. He felt that we were the kind of group that they can mold and do stuff with, because the Imperials were very talented young men. They, in their right, they were. Kenny Seymour, Ernest Wright, Clarence Collins, Tracy Lord, they all, they either played instruments or they're very involved in music. And they had great airs. And I guess Don heard it in our previous songs or records that we did. And he decided that he could do something with this group and really get a plan going. So we started with Outside Looking In. And because we first heard it, we liked it, and we did it. And right away, they called us to say that Murray Kaufman at that time was the big disc jockey in New York City, fell in love with it. He actually broke the song in New York City, which you never break a song in New York. It's either Baltimore, Philly, you know, that kind of thing. But they broke it in New York City on WINS Winds, same station that was Alan Freed's station.
Yeah, WINS. Missouri, the key is A. That's what he used to call himself.
The submarine races. Anyway, he broke that song. Then we all became friends from, you know, all that time. So Outside Looking In was our launching thing. In fact, we were doing a show with Murray Decay and Jay and the Americans, Jay Black at that time. Jay Train had gone, the original cat, the first cat. But Jay Black just came, and our dressing rooms were next to each other at the Brooklyn Fox. And so we said, hey man, you want to hear our new record? So he said, okay, Jay and all the cats, a couple of cats in the Americans. I can't remember who, I see who it is, but I'm trying to get his name. Sandy was one of them. And they played it. And Sandy said, cool. And Jay said, nah, that ain't the song. He liked the other side. So that kind of made me insecure. I'm going, oh, no. You mean you like, oh, well, I'm telling you, Jay says, the other side is the one that should be the A side. Well, he was wrong, and I'm glad he was. We laughed at him for many years afterwards, but again, that was history began.
Gary, I'm wondering, did you ever have that experience with any of your songs where, you know, it started out maybe as the B-side and became the hit, or you had that kind of criticism like Anthony just mentioned?
Well, I guess in a certain way, when it came to our first record, we had no idea what was going to happen, you know, and we were just fortunate that everybody loved that record, went out and immediately bought it, even though in those days, radio stations could choose whether they wanted to play the A side or the B side. And our B side was getting as much airplay as the A side. Woman, Woman, A side, Don't Make Promises, the B side. And so they were working kind of against each other. So finally, Jerry had said to me, well, we may have to go back in and record and try again. However, there was a disc jockey in Columbus, Ohio, program director that loved Woman, Woman, put it on his stations. And it went to number one in Columbus. That's when Columbia Records jumped in, called me in San Diego and said, we're going to bring you to Cleveland and we're going to promote this record. So when we recorded Young Girl, Jerry says, no doubt, we got a second hit record right here, you know. So it was kind of fun to be able to do that.
You know, I've heard so many times on this podcast from guys in this era that we're talking about that some disc jockey in some place decided to get behind the record, and that's what started the ball rolling. Okay.
Yeah. You know why? Disc jockeys were king. They picked the records. They were the one to decide until payola. And that broke that up. It's like a company being broken up, like Bell used to be the largest telephone company in the world, and they broke them up, antitrust, and they all became all the little telephones we have today. So that's what happened, man.
You're right. They had a lot of power back then.
I got a question for you, Anthony, that just is a curiosity to me. Did Mr. Costa arrange your vocals when he was producing you? Because your vocals were unbelievable. I mean, your lead vocal, as well as your background vocals, phenomenal.
You know, we're a bunch of kids out of Brooklyn. And we're the street kids, man. We're the hooligans. That's what we were. But we sang, and it saved our lives. And we just knew each other, and, you know, one of Clarence lived across the way from me in Fort Greene Projects in Brooklyn. And then Ernest lived up the next building. So we would see each other in school. We would see each other all the time. And one day, I think that we got to how it happened was Clarence was telling me about his group, which he called the Chesters. And he didn't have a lead singer. And that's how I got involved with them. Because I had just left this group called the DuPonts. And we had some regional hits, you know, Connecticut, Jersey, that kind of thing, Brooklyn. And but we didn't have international or national hits at all. So the thing that we did was they were known in the project as the singing group. They were really popular in the hood. But they didn't have that one thing that Clarence heard. He knew, he says, I know a guy, man, we can get him in this group. This could really help us, you know? And he came to me one day, I don't know where we were, in the schoolyard or something. And he said, hey, you know that my group, the Chesters? And I said, yeah, everybody knows the Chesters. He said, do you want to sing with us? I said, did you have a guy named Ronald Ross or something? No, he left the group, man, and we got a chance to get a record deal. Because I met this guy called Richard Barrett. And these guys, the Imperials, it wasn't that they were great singers individually, but they did something that is unique. They blended.
Right. Certainly did.
When they sang together, that was their strength.
You're right about that. All right. We got one more song I want to go through, which is Hurt So Bad, a gigantic hit for you. 1965. Tell us about that one.
Hurt So Bad was most unusual because actually we had gone on ahead and Teddy was in Europe and he came back. I was promoting the records and he came back and he said, hey, man, I got a song. Oh, he said, this is really cool. And I want to play it for you. Again, we went over there to DCP Productions and he gets on this little upright piano. I can remember that piano so clearly. It was so old. But boy, all them hits came out of that piano, you know. And he started playing it, and I said, wow. Actually, when I heard it, I was flabbergasted, more than going out of my head, because something in there reminded me of me. And this little girl I knew in Fort Greene, I had a puppy crush on. And her name was Nunny, N-U-N-N-Y, or I-E. And she didn't like me at all. I had like, I was like 14, 15, you know, same. And she didn't like me, but as a young kid, I was emotionally damaged by it. That's why I messed up today. she associated with me so easily. And then the fact that Teddy was having this thing with his wife, it just, we started singing it, and Teddy said, "Look, wait a minute, hold it." He calls Don in his office. He says, "Don, come in here." And I just got hold of it. I mean, like, I understood it, because my heart was broken by this little girl. His heart was broken. So as soon as Don came in, he says, "Come on, do the first few bars, man, do the first few bars." And he gave me the lyrics, and I can hear melodies to this day and catch it in the seconds. And so I sang the first few bars, and Don Custer said, you know, they knew. So the combination of the Imperials, myself and Teddy, and Don Costa producing was unbelievable, which he would go back. If you notice, you guys, Sinatra, right behind us, did Going Out of My Head. He recorded it with the same orchestra we used for Don Costa, same cats. And I met some really great musicians in that orchestra, like Ray Brown, the great bass player, Styx Evans, the great drummer. And I met a lot of people. I mean, I can tell you, like I said, I can stand there and tell you stories. That's how I got a radio show. I got my own radio show on Sirius Radio because I was talking to them. They heard me about this story. And another part about this story is unusual. When we were recording it, you know, Gary, everybody recorded in the same studio at the same time. If you had a bunch of musicians or you were self-contained, doesn't matter. There wasn't those tracks, though. You didn't sing in Ohio and then do the other track in Mississippi. Right? So everybody was in the studio all at once. So there was like 100 people in there. 46-piece orchestra. And us, the girl singers, with the singers he used in the Imperials. And I can remember looking up in the booth and Don Costa sitting there. And this guy sitting next to him. And I looked at, there were two. One was a black dude. And I looked at him, I said, I've seen that guy before. And the other guy, I kind of said, I seen him. I didn't know who they were. When the break came, because you had to do three, four, five, six songs in a day, they came down. And that guy came down was Angelo Dundee. He was the manager of trainer of
Muhammad Ali, yeah.
He was known as Cassius Clay. And he had just beaten Sonny Liston. And when he came in, Ernest said, "Champ," one of the Imperials. He says, "Champ." And we all look at me with, oh, crap. That song Hurt So Bad made my relationship with him all the way up until he died.
Incredible. Hey, listen, we have been speaking here with Little Anthony, of Little Anthony and the Imperials, and my co-host here, Gary. I want to thank you guys so much for doing this podcast. It's been so wonderful to have you on and to hear this music that's been going on for so many years. Just fantastic. Gary, any words you want to say at the end here?
Just thank you very much for having me on, Robert. I do appreciate it. It's good to see you, Anthony. Glad you're back in good health again. I want to say to all my fans and friends out there, I love you. God bless you. Take care. Glory goes to God.
Yeah, always. You said everything I was going to say, but
we'll say it again.
Yeah, okay. The fans out there and all those folks listening or whatever, you are the complete heartbeat of what we do. And it made this little kid, little nappy-haired kid out of Brooklyn, live a life that you can't even explain. It's fairy tales of the great people, and the biggest of politicians and kings and queens and that, how does that happen? Only by the grace of God, my friend, because it's like destiny. It was everything seemed to fall in place, and I wasn't even trying. You know, I was just in the right place at the right time, and then it would happen. So thank you to all you folks out there that kind of still listen, and thanks. I know you can't hear me, but thanks, Mr. Sinatra, for giving me a career.
That's great, Anthony.
All right, everybody. I want to thank you all for listening, and we will see you in the next episode.
Thanks for listening to the Follow Your Dream podcast. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast so you don't miss another inspiring episode. You can connect with Robert at robert@followyourdreampodcast.com. And you can hear more from his band at projectgrandslam.com.
You've kept the secret of your youth. You led me to...